From an album for guitar and piano together, we heard two pieces by Carlos Guastavino from a suite called La Presencias. And the pieces were played by guitarist Stefano Cardi and Enrique Pierannunzi at the piano. And the album is called American Music for Guitar and Piano. Starting off this hour here on WMUK, classical WMUK. And as promised, on the phone line with me today is editor of Encore magazine, Marie Lee. And it's nice to have you back once again. Marie, how are you?
Good. Thank you, Kara. I'm doing well.
The new issue was just released. Today, we're actually on top of things here at Classical WMUK. And I know that the process never ends. The March issue must be primary for you as well right now. But it is nice to the satisfaction of releasing an issue must be something you still enjoy, even after a number of years in the position.
You know, it's so funny. Like you said, we're already working on March. And so when February came out, you know, like, oh, it's here. All right, what's next? And, you know, I had an intern that told me once that he could not believe that we got these magazines and we didn't all just run over to them and pour them open. And it was like, yeah, we've been living with it for three weeks. We're okay. So, yeah, I mean, I wish there was more excitement when we got the issues, but not as much.
It's that kind of, what am I thinking, a sort of a grittiness that you grow into when you're a hard-nosed reporter. What's on the next story, onto the next story. But it really is a chance to connect with many parts of West Michigan. Now, the cover story for February features Dr. Michelle Johnson. Would you tell me about how you tracked down her work and what made you think she would be ideal for a cover story?
Well, Chris Killian actually laid the foundation for this story a year ago. Michelle had come across our radar because she was doing some pretty interesting things with DJ Disobedience. And, you know, the more we looked into her background, it was like, oh, you know, she's doing some stuff that's interesting. And so Chris actually did the initial interview and wrote up an initial draft. And then he decided he wanted to go hike the Pacific Coast Trail. And so he left, but we both felt like the story had a lot more legs. And I gave him, you know, some sort of paltry word count. So he tried really hard to fit everything into that. But when we got the story, we were like, there's way more here to talk about than you know, 800 words is going to let us talk about. And so I ended up interviewing Michelle in the fall, and it was just mind-blowing how much stuff that woman is involved in and what she's doing. But what I really loved is everything that she does has a history aspect to it, even her DJing, because she picks music that goes back in time. It's not just, you know, current pop stuff. So anyway, it was one of those things that we weren't wrong when we started exploring how much she did and what her involvement in the community was.
Michelle Johnson is a Black doctor, an artist, as you said, a disc jockey for both live and on the radio kind of settings, a public scholar and intellectual. And one of the things that jumped out is, you know, when you ask Michelle about her early years, she was interested in history as a child. And compared to me, I was not interested in history because I wasn't alive then. So I had no consideration for this. So I think this appreciation for bigger stories, older stories, is really a wellspring for Dr. Johnson.
Well, you know, Michelle, she told me that the thing about history for her is that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, history is over, move on, today is modern. But there's so much that we still have to learn from history and what we, you know, and what happened in the past and how it impacted people's lives. And that definitely shows in the work that she's doing with the Kalamazoo Historical and Cultural Landscape Project, where they are identifying and are going to put markers in areas of the community that tell the stories of the Black, Latinx, and Indigenous people that were part of this community and still are part of this community. But she said, you know, if the history of things inform us and help us make better decisions going forward, and I think that's why she's so intrigued by it, and it's imbued in everything she does.
She earned her degrees at two Michigan schools, Michigan State University, a degree in humanities, and then a degree, a PhD in American culture from the University of Michigan. She was determined to pursue history, Black history in Michigan, and she also loves the author Zora Neale Hurston. And does she see Hurston as some sort of icon, a person to look up to? What am I saying?
Actually, she didn't discover Hurston until she went to college. And when she took a class, her very first, I think, first class she'd ever taken in African-American history, and it focused on Zora Neale Hurston, she said it was life-changing. She was like, that's what I want to do. That right there is what I want to do. I want to be like her. So there's no doubt that she was a role model for Michelle.
That's the phrase, role model. Hurston was a folklorist. She tracked down stories. She recorded stories of many people in communities, as well as a novelist and writer. So you can really see the through line between. I'm speaking with Marie Lee, editor of Encore magazine. You can find the latest issue. It's online at EncoreKalamazoo.com, or you can pick it up in hundreds of locations around West Michigan. You can also have it sent to your home. Is that correct?
Absolutely. There's a way to subscribe on our website at www.EncoreKalamazoo.com. So absolutely, have it mailed to you so you don't have to go looking for a copy around town.
The title public scholar is new to me. I put a star next to that. There are such positions as public scholar and state historian, and Michelle Johnson has occupied both of those in her many roles.
Yes, she has. Yeah, the public scholar thing was a little bit new to me, but in the context of, she was talking about how it weaves art and humanities and things like history and applies it in the community. So she takes it outside the academic walls and applies it in the community for, you know, projects that are for the community good and improvement. And yeah, it was a new concept to me too, but apparently it's one that has a lot of legs because she's created her own a nonprofit with some other public scholars in the area. Called the Institute of Public Scholarship, and she got a 3-year grant from the Stryker Johnston Foundation to basically fund her work and get it off the ground.
The article literally says one more thing at the end. It's from a list of, it sounds like you could keep going on and on. Dr. Johnson is also, well, I don't want to gloss over this. She's a playwright and a novelist. She's writing with a Carlene Gill, a memoir of Ms. Gill's memories of being a dancer at the Idlewild Review, and just bringing more history back to life. In the One More Thing paragraph, we're talking about something called the Michigan Manual of Freedmen's Progress. It has a kind of a old-timey ring to it, Marie.
It does. Well, it's because it was originally published in 1915. But she wants to republish it with a new kind of a better index and, you know, an updated preface. because the information is just so rich, and the information, it's a historic view of basically Negroes was what they called it in Michigan, but African Americans in Michigan at the time of the half century exposition, the Lincoln Jubilee that was held in Chicago. And it's just, she just said, there's just so much information there that's just so rich in history that she doesn't want it to be buried and forgotten.
So she's excited by details and data.
Yes, she is. Yeah. You can just tell with everything she does. I mean, it's incredible. I don't know how big the brain she has is, but it's got to be enormous to hold all the information and stuff that she does.
Yeah. What was it like preparing to interview Dr. Michelle Johnson? Did you have a limited amount of time? Were you hoping to keep the scope to this size and it grew? What is your approach?
Well, you know, originally I had three things that Chris had highlighted in his story that I wanted to explore a little more, because he had said, hey, she does this and this and this. And I was like, oh, I want to know more about this. And so I just said, hey, can I, you know, interview you and ask you a couple more questions and just flesh out the story a little more? And she's like, sure. And I think it was a 2-hour interview, and it was that's a long one for me. And mm-hmm. so it was just, you know, every time she'd say something, I'd be like, well, tell me about that or tell me about that. And we got to the point where, you know, we promised ourselves when we bought Encore 10 years ago that we would not ever have 5,000 word stories. You know, those used to have really, really long stories. But Michelle's is probably one of the longest ones we've ever run. And it's because you feel this sense as a journalist that you're going to leave something out that's important. And I can tell you still from the interview, there was stuff that didn't make it in there about, you know, how she feels about being a DJ. I mean, there was some really interesting about how it's very liberating for her. And it's like one of the things that she most enjoys in life is doing that. And then she was able to give me a lot of background about her childhood that we didn't have in the original story. So, it was hard. It was really hard to cull down everything we wanted to write about. But we looked at how, you know, what she did impacted the larger community or would have been interest to people in the larger community. Because, you know, they might have seen her DJing at a live event. They might have listened to her show on WIDR. And not known, you know, the depth of the woman behind the voice.
I got the sense that Michelle Johnson is a great community builder. She can reach out and bring people together and make projects happen, including the Riverview Wellness Park, which is part of the story. But she's also a scholar and needs personal time to herself and development time. She's doing solo projects as well to be complete. It's not all interactive with community members and community projects. There's also a whole side of her that involves solo work and thinking and music as well. That's I plan to get to, actually, at the end of our interview, I have a little Ellington to play.
So
we can make a nod to her her musician birth father and some of her older memories. So that's what I think the article did really well. She's a very complete whole person in the writing here, and one that I can't wait to shake her hand if I meet her in person.
Oh, yeah, she's pretty wonderful. So I was really happy when we did the story and restarted reworking it. I told her, you know, I think maybe we'll run this in February, and I did not even think about it coinciding with Black History Month. And she was like, oh my God, that'd be perfect. It's like, oh, okay. And it was absolutely perfect.
Well, Marie, let's move on to some of the other highlights of Encore's February issue. Why don't we turn the corner and look at some business articles that showcase local businesses that are doing very well, following their own dreams. And that includes Sales Page, which for me was not an article I'd necessarily be drawn to, because it has to do with complex financial people looking, you know, helping the financial industry understand its own work.
Yeah, it was interesting because when we asked the writer Jordan Bradley to write it, initially she was like, "Why does this interest you?" And I'm like, "Because this company totally flies under the radar in Kalamazoo, and yet it's growing super fast. It went from 25 employees in 2013 to 70 employees today."
Wow.
And but I think that, you know, she was like, "Well, can you tell me what they do?" And I'm like, "No, I really can't. You're going to have to ask them." And I think that Anna Evans, the director of marketing, really helped sum it up for us to understand that, you know, I mean, I could read her quote, but I won't. But, you know, they were able to put it in normal people's language to understand what they do. So essentially what they do is they sell products to help the people that work in the asset management business, and, you know, the investment business, to they're like provide software solutions for them. See, I can't even articulate it. But it's really interesting.
Well, these big financial companies are gathering data all the time. And what do they do with the data? They probably just let it sit. And then a company like this comes along and makes sense of it for them so they can put energy where it needs to go. Is how I looked at it.
I think that's a great way to look at it. Yep, absolutely.
Isn't that the trick of rule one for entrepreneurs? Find a need and meet it.
Oh yeah, and I think what we really embrace. I mean, it's not a very sexy subject, right? And so, you go to their headquarters and which are in the Foundry Building on East Michigan Avenue in the fringes of downtown, and it just is so indicative of, I think, the founder's personality and the people that work there. Because, I mean, they have kind of a dry topic, but their offices are really creative. I mean, we have some beautiful pictures taken by Brian that show just the, they have designated meeting rooms that pay homage to different aspects of the community. There's a Java room, and the art on the walls is just, all this hand-drawn stuff, it's really lovely, and at the same time, it has a real energy to it. And we hope, you know, we wanted to capture the energy because, like we said, it's not the sexiest subject, but this is a company that is, an entrepreneurially based company in Kalamazoo that's doing really well despite the pandemic.
They're called Sales Page, and the article is eye-opening. It's in the February issue of Encore magazine. EncoreKalamazoo.com is where you'll find some of these articles. And of course, the paper issue for me is more of the full experience. Well, let's turn to something that is a little more sexy, and that's chocolate.
Yes. You cannot have a February issue without chocolate in it somewhere. That is the truth.
So this is a look at a new business. A former gallery owner finds the art in making chocolate. There is a visual component to enjoying chocolate, as we learn in this, an extremely detailed creation of these little bonbons that, you know, are going to be gone in a second. But she wants all the presentation there. Would you tell us a little more about her?
Oh, so this is Sherry Emery, and Sherry Emery owned art galleries in over on the lakeshore for several years. And she had also experimented in making chocolates and caramels. And it was actually her daughter that, as she sort of watched the gallery business, you know, recede, her daughter was the one who suggested that she become a chocolatier. And when she created her shop downtown, she also used a lot of her art gallery background. She found these unique pieces that she put in the, you know, these beautiful round cases. I don't know where anybody finds round glass cases, but they're absolutely gorgeous, and they display the chocolate wonderfully. At the same time, she talks about how chocolate, making chocolate for her, is very healing. Now, you know, some of us would say that eating chocolate is very healing, but for her, making chocolate is this exercise in working through things that are painful. Like she had a son who died just before he turned 30 from a rare blood disease, and her own twin died at 40 from an aneurysm. So she's had a lot of loss in her life, and making chocolate is one of the ways that she has worked through it and healed.
At the advice of another beloved family member, her daughter.
Yes.
Sherry, is it Sherry? Or, yeah, Sherry's Chocolate.
It is Sherry. Yeah, Sherry Chocolate Art. Yeah. Doesn't really roll off the tongue quite as easy, but she combines chocolate and art.
It's on the Kalamazoo Mall. You may have seen, listeners may have seen it, just walking along. Here's the chance to learn about the person behind the storefront and the clearly beautiful and deeply detailed products that she creates. I'm speaking with editor Marie Lee of Encore Magazine. We get in touch once a month to talk about the stories in the latest issue. They cover a wide range of topics in West Michigan. And perhaps we could talk now about Sarah Jacobs, and this would be a topic of health care for a topic of homelessness in West Michigan, and an organization called Kalamazoo County Continuum of Care. She's the director. You also wrote this story about Sarah Jacobs, Marie.
I did. Yeah. We had done the interview with Sarah before a lot of stuff that's been happening, the homeless encampments in Kalamazoo, the fires and the explosions. Before those actually happened. But timing is good because I think those incidents bring it back to the forefront of people's thoughts about, you know, people in our community that are homeless and what is being done about it. And what I really learned from Sarah is that, you know, it's cliche to say, you know, it's a very complex problem that isn't solved easily. But what is going on in this community is there are a whole lot of agencies and organizations that are doing different pieces of work to work on the homelessness problem. And it takes an organization like the Continuum of Care to bring them together. And a perfect example she gave was when they needed a overflow day shelter because Ministry of the Community, because of the COVID restrictions, could not have as many people in its facility as needed to be in its facility. And it took some doing. I mean, several meetings, lots of time to basically have the River Church across the street become an overflow shelter. And it was just, she said, there's just all these logistics that people don't think about. They think, oh, just open an empty building and let them go in there. But it doesn't work like that. You know, the building has to be safe and it has to be heated. And there's all these things. So she was talking about, for her job's all about bringing the right people into the room to come up with ways that they can all work together and collaborate to solve different components of the problem of homelessness.
She's also an ideal advocate for homeless people because she lived it herself.
She did. When she was 16, she said she left home because she felt like she was in an unsafe situation and was homeless on the streets for a year. And she tells these stories, or she told some amazing stories about just how you... They give you, put it in perspective, that let you understand maybe a little bit of the thinking of people who are homeless. She said, you know, I didn't have time to really think about, you know, getting services. Part of the problem was she was 16 and she did not want, you know, to be found by anybody that would take her and put her in the foster care situation.
Marie, I'm just going to make a small correction. Here it says she was 14, actually.
Oh, 14. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. You're right. She was 14. Anyway, so she was, that's right. By the time she was 16, she was living on her own in Michigan. But anyway, so she was 14. And so she said that she had to, I'm so sorry. My phone was ringing.
it's all right.
So she said, you know, instead of like somebody trying to find services, she couldn't really do that because she didn't want to be discovered. And then secondly, she said, you're just so focused on, okay, where's my next meal coming from? Or where am I going to sleep tonight? And she said that one of the things that she had found is outside of a packaging company, there was a dumpster that was just full of paper. And it was like the safest place she could find. And so she spent many, many nights sleeping in that dumpster. And it was just, it was interesting to listen to that because I just don't think that, I mean, you think about that survival mode, like what do you do? I mean, how they think about it on a daily basis, you know, you're just trying to figure out how to survive. So yeah, so she's I think she's not only got a lot of empathy, but she understands.
Her organization is called Kalamazoo County Continuum of Care. And as you explained, it puts together pieces for people. I mean, if you're hungry, you're not going to, you know, go out and marshal all the resources yourself. I can't think about anything if I was that hungry. That's all I'd be thinking about, and where to sleep. So mm-hmm. She understands it's a big picture issue, and of course one we are still struggling with here in Kalamazoo. I know that Encore has done numerous articles, taken this issue very seriously, and I'm sure there are more to come, Marie, as it continues to evolve.
I hope that the articles that we'll be writing about in the future regarding homelessness are more about how Kalamazoo rallies and solves problems, because it really does. And, you know, it was just announced last week, of course, past press time, that the hotel that she refers to in the article that they were trying to buy has been indeed purchased. And so the Lift Foundation, which is one of the Continuum of Care's partners in the area, has bought the Knights Inn on Westridge Avenue, and with the intention of turning it into a place where homeless people can live. And, you know, that's a pretty significant accomplishment for them, because that gives them, you know, when it's all said and done, they'll have 60 living spaces there for people, and that's 60 more than the community had, you know, a week ago. And so even though the homeless problems and the encampments seem to be getting bigger and bigger all the time, there are people that are fighting really hard to make that issue go away. And I mean go away by being solved and people getting the help they need.
That was a major announcement and a big positive step. And it was delightful to read the article and realize, oh, it was Sarah Jacobs was a major part of this. Finally, your magazine features five faves. It's a regular, it's a monthly thing, five favorites. And often you go to the wonderful Lynn Houghton, who is one of the most respected historians we have here in West Michigan. And this time you were asked her to look at couples, and she found five couples from our own history that still affect us today.
Absolutely. I think the hardest thing for Lynn, when we ask her, give her these assignments, she's like, just five? I'm like, yeah, just five, you know, because she's like, I could give you a dozen. I could give you two dozen. But she, for this issue, she stuck with, you know, couples that a lot of us might not have heard of. I mean, you know, there's a lot of modern day couples that are power brokers or movers and shakers in our community. I wouldn't exactly call some of the couples in this issue of Movers and Shakers, but they're very, every one of them had an impact on the community in a significant way. And for things that we enjoy today, from the library to K College. She did a great job finding the couples.
I do recognize the Upjohns, and the Kleinstocks is a name that rings a bell because of the Kleinstock Preserve. New to me were the Harrises, Enoch and Deborah, who were Black landowners, and their land was it's now part of Western's Parkview campus. First apple orchard planted by Enoch Harris. The pictures make me smile because they're so old. You know, there's the clothes and the postures of yesteryear.
Many of these were taken when you weren't supposed to smile and you're supposed to sit very, very, very still. And so you can tell they're sitting very, very, very still.
Yes.
But, you know, someday somebody will look at our pictures and say the same thing, Tara. That's kind of the bad news about it.
You're right. I'll be gone. So have at it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Please tell me, what were you going to say?
Oh, I say, I think my favorite picture has to be of Carl Kleinstock holding his document, you know, because when you read the article and you learn that she met him in Germany, and he's just, you know, he's just obviously was a wonderful character, and it would have been wonderful to know.
Listeners, in case you missed that, Marie said he's holding a dachshund.
He's wearing like fur-lined gloves and a hat. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
He looks like he wandered in off of the, you know, tundra carrying this dachshund.
And apparently there were no portraits in which they both appeared together. So we have one of each at different times.
Only the Harrises. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That's what Lynn had pointed out to me. She said, you know, they never were together in pictures. And that was like, well, yeah, makes sense.
Marie Lee, it is always such a pleasure to talk to you and hear your take on the work you do at Encore Magazine. Of course, it just always continues. March is coming around the corner, and we'll talk again then. I wanted to go back to one of my favorite sentences, really, from the profile of Dr. Michelle Johnson. It says, Michelle's biological father, Roy S. Merricks, was a musician who played with a Kalamazoo band called King Oliver and His Men. Johnson's family lived on one side of a duplex, King Oliver and his wife on the other, and she grew up listening to late night jam sessions of the popular dance music of the day. And that's where I'd like to end up here. I have some Duke Ellington lined up, a piece called The Big House Blues. Sounds like an easy enough tune to just have a nice late night jam on. And I think we'll end with that selection. Marie, thanks so much for joining me again.
Oh, thank you, Tara. It was fun.
We'll talk to you in March.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.